Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chods. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
Hello, Jamie here. Before we get into the main podcast, just explain the situation that's been going on, just to keep it a continuity thing going on. Mark and I recorded our bit, which is the first sort of hour of the show. We recorded this about a week ago before I had some dental surgery, which turned into quite a complicated procedure, root canal, and basically couldn't speak for a few days. So you'll hear us mention that Gary Bayes is our guest. I unfortunately missed my window with Gary because of the operation, and when I finally was feeling better, he was abroad at a show. So hopefully we've got Gary on next week. I've arranged to record him one day next week. We've got a couple of great guests lined up for the future, actually, over the next few weeks. Been very busy. While I haven't been able to do much, I've been very busy sort of emailing people and making contacts, and we have some fantastic episodes upcoming. Just one more development before we go back to the show. One more development is that the trip that we have to John Max Lake at Tangdabernia in March, it's the middle of March, it is a chance to go fishing with myself and John McAllister. There are six people booked on the trips. There's a couple of people had to pull out, and so there are two spaces available. The weather is warming up nicely. There's fish being caught over there, and if you're following John Mack or his bait company on Facebook, you'll see that there's loads and loads of fish gone in over this winter. There was a decent stock in there anyway, and there's been a lot of 50s, 40s, 20s and 30s gone in over the course of this winter. Some fantastic looking fish. So there are two spaces available should anybody wish to take those up. They will go pretty quickly. The price is £350, and that's for a week's fishing. Drive and survive, so get yourself there, but there'll be lots of drinks and barbecues and merriment for a week. So if you want to get your fishing season off with a bang in the middle of March, then get in touch with myself, Jamie Klosick, on my Facebook or through the Carpcast page or the official Carpcast fan page or one of them, and swipe those two places up if you so wish. So gonna hand back to myself and Mark that we recorded last week. So hello and welcome to episode 68 of the Carpcast. And I believe on the other end of this wonderful digital technology is Mr. Mark Watson.
Yes, I'm here. And just as I said that, we had another piece of wonderful digital technology. That swoosh of an email went through my ears.
Were you sending me something?
Yeah, you should have the CC68 planner arriving on your lap ready shortly.
Ah, well, yes,
not that it ever gets taken any notice of at all, so it's just a token value.
We get told off for going off at tangents, though, so we better stick to the plan.
Yeah, speaking of staying on topic and not going off on tangents, are you still taking cold showers?
Yes. I am. There was actually one of our angling buddies has just sent me a piece from, is it the Daily Mail or something, new article about Posh Spice taking cold showers, 90 seconds a day to change your life. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I did see it, and it made me smile because it was like 30 seconds cold, 30 seconds hot and 30 seconds cold again, which to me is pretty pointless. You know, anybody can stand in a cold shower for 30 seconds, and to be honest, it's not going to make a great deal of difference. You know, if you're going to do it properly, you know, you want to be in there for, after you've got used to the cold, obviously, don't go jumping into it. But as I just mentioned, you know, I lay in cold baths now. You know, I had a cold shower after working out this morning, and had the podcast on the top, and I was in there for at least a good 15 minutes or so.
I've seen all the tree huggers and green people complaining about the 15-minute showers on the Wim Hof page because of the waste of water. But I have my normal shower and then I go cold. But I think it's the hot and cold. I can see the logic in what Posh Spice is saying, the 30 seconds. Your body's changing, having to adapt very quickly, and it's something to do with that strengthens your immune system. But I just have like a normal shower, then I go cold, and I have the cold for about 90 seconds to 2 minutes sort of thing. But it certainly gives me motivation for the day, even if I'm tired or a bit groggy. And I haven't been ill since, you know, I keep feeling the start of a cold or a chest cough coming on, and everyone around me is getting ill, but I don't actually get full blown ill. And I did used to get coughs and colds fairly regular, and I haven't done since I started this. Like I say, I get the startings of it, but it never fully develops.
So. Yeah, it does wonders for the immune system, and your tolerance towards cold. You know, it builds up, you know, brown fat. You know, if you listen to all, you know, some of this Wim Hof stuff, all the scientific research into it, it's quite fascinating. But do you know what's caught my eye as well? And we're going well off tangent here, so I'm not going to apologise.
We've not got 30 seconds into the podcast.
Yeah, okay, it's ours. We'll do what the hell we want. But yeah, this comes from a non-fishing friend's Facebook. She was congratulating a friend of hers who just completed an ice mile.
Wow, what's an ice mile?
An ice mile is a mile swim in water of 5 degrees or less.
Wow. I actually tried
swimming. Fancy one.
I tried swimming five lengths in the local swimming pool the other day. That certainly wasn't 5 degrees. I struggled with that. I'm on a get fit mission again. But it's kind of relevant to fishing because we spend a lot of time outside in the elements, and I've always felt that's good for me anyway. Just, you know, being near trees. You know, getting the oxygen from...
Do you hug them?
Yeah. Look, getting oxygen from being outside, you know, being in nature, staying out overnight, breathing that, you know, presumably fresh air for at least 24 hours. I've always felt that's... You know, I get ill less than a lot of people that I know, and I'm sure that's maybe because you're building up a tolerance to bugs and, you know, bacteria, and just by living out there and, you know, washing your plates and cooking stuff in lake water and, you know, like all the things that we kind of sacrifice by living outside. I mean, cart gear is very comfortable, isn't it? But it's still, you know, there are many people that never spend a night of their life under the stars. Ever, you know, and obviously we must be a bit more hardened because the way your immune system works, it works with like building an immunity to things you come in contact with. And if you never come into contact with things, then, you know, they're going to affect you a lot more. I'm sure of it. Which is why I think this cold water treatment works, because it's forcing your body to go into shock. Almost, and I know a lot of the like UFC fighters and stuff, they use the cold water training to repair injuries. They reckon the injuries repair a lot quicker. What's it called? Cryo something, isn't it? The cryo tank or something they go into.
Yeah, cryotherapy that Joe Rogan talks on about. I remember the ice bucket challenges. Do you ever see one of the WWE wrestlers or former wrestlers, Batista?
No.
It was in Guardians of the Galaxy as well, that big muscular dude. I forgot his name in the film, but anyway. He did it. He was sat in an ice bath. The ice cube was bobbing all around him, and his comments were something like, you know, bitch, please, I do this every day.
Yeah.
You know, he's former, like, you know, collegiate wrestler, all that sort of thing, which is, it's just, you know, what a lot of people, you know, like rugby players do it, and people who work out do it, it's proven good, and I'm enjoying it as well. You know, I'm quite, I won't say overly tolerant to the cold, but... It does. You get that glow for the full day if you have it first thing in the morning. I wake up. I'll have a coffee. Do a bit of daft breathing exercises, which are not really that daft, but you know, do them. I'm holding my breath for nearly 4 minutes at a time now as well.
And there's an obvious
cold shower, and I'm like glowing for the day.
Yeah, it's good. And it's good to test your body anyway, whether that be pushing weights, aerobics, running. You know, whatever, even, you know, I notice at the start of the year, if I'm fishing a syndicate and, you know, I'm there most weeks, even just pushing your barra from that, you know, your first session in March or April, whenever your ticket starts, that first session pushing your barra to, you know, 16 weeks later, 20 weeks later, when you're used to doing it, moving swims once or twice, maybe in the session, but, you know, and I go pretty heavy on tackle, you know, bivvy's heavy, I have a big wide boy bed chair and I'm pretty comfortable, but that's all heavy on the barra, and try pushing that through mud with a slightly flat tire or whatever, which usually happens. At the start of the year, I always used to notice it when I was, you know, fishing syndicates every year. I always remember thinking, bloody hell, this barra is going to be a lot easier in a few weeks' time once I'm used to doing it every week. because you just strengthen those muscles. And you know, fishing was about the only exercise I got, walking around the lake looking for fish, climbing trees, and obviously being there. There's a major use for the cold water thing as well, and that's going to be, you know, if you ever fall in a lake, especially a deep water lake in the winter when it's cold, you can die. You know, your body goes into shock and it can give you a heart attack and stop your heart, basically. And if you're having, you know, a 60 second short sharp shock in the morning of cold shower, that's got to protect your body against that as well, you know, that toxic shock syndrome, whatever they call it.
Yeah, well, Duffy's toxic shock. I know there's definitely a word for it, and even through the summer there's always warnings for people who go out swimming. And as I just mentioned, that ice mile, I was looking at a few YouTube videos of people doing this sort of thing, and in the searches, when you search open water swimming, all these like clubs that do it come off. There's also these warning videos of don't go swimming. Don't go swimming in open water, because you know, even through the summer, and I know this myself, remember, because back on pit two, I had the most informative feature finding session I've ever had with a snorkel and mask while there was no one else around and no bayless. And it was middle of summer, it was a roasting hot day, but I'm just like, you know, floating around, and just as I got over that ledge where the depth drops, you know, like 15 down to 20 foot and beyond, it was like just being hit by cold. It's kind of like knocks the wind out of you. So that was a quick return to shore.
Yeah, talking about Elstow too, we had a message from somebody recently asking on some tips. I think they'd just joined and were asking for how to fish it. If you want to ask us questions, there is a forum within the extra section of our website, www.thecarpcast.com, and we'll answer general stuff for content of the show, you know, a few messages or ask us on Facebook. But if you want anything specific, you're going to have to support us in some way, and that may be by joining the Carpcast and getting access to every back episode we've ever made, all 68 of them it'll be after this one. Plus there's 11 pieces of extra content with millions of guests in there, from Lee Jackson to Daryl Peck to Kevin Nash, Ronnie DeGroote, Chili, Adam Henning, Ian Russell. There's loads of them. It's a who's who of anglers telling stories, and you can get all that for £35 a year. There's 3 month options and 6 month options in there as well. But if you want to ask us a question, pick our brains, gain some knowledge, then you need to do that in the forum that's within the Carpcast Extra when you subscribe. We're doing this, a lot of this, for free. You know, there are hours and hours and hours of free content here, but if you want to make sure that free content keeps going forever, then supporting us is a way to do it, because if we don't get supported, there might come a time we go, can't be bothered doing this anymore. You know, it doesn't, my time is worth more than entertaining the masses for free. So just a little warning, if you don't support us, then it may not be here. But anyway, yeah, ask any questions away in there. I take it you've not been fishing, Mark? You've done it?
No, I was nearly going to go tomorrow, but the lake in question has got a lid on. Plus, I was going to go with my pal Big Dan. He's a young lad, so not very well, so we're going to be staying home with him instead.
Oh dear, the weather went mint. We had pressure down to 990s over this last week. As predicted, fish did get caught. I know Nash Lake Royston, their new day ticket lake, that kicked off. Matt Rhodes, the bailiff down there, he's been posting loads of live videos on Facebook of fish being landed. It seems like that did quite a few bites when it switched on. I know Clearwater Fisheries, who are official sponsor of the Carpcast, they're a fantastic day ticket lake and cafe up in Carnforth. You can check out clearwaterfisheries.co.uk or the Facebook group. But I know they did one of their fish called Popeye, came out at 33 on Friday night, which I think is up in weight as well, which just goes to show, and it, fish do feed. Even when, I mean, nowhere's fish great, is it? There's been a handful of fish out of well-stocked waters over the winter. It seems to be the same sort of waters, but 99% of waters have not been doing fish in the last 2 months, bar the odd freak of nature. It's been one of the worst winters for fishing I can remember.
Yeah, and it's, we've not even had any lengthy freeze-up, have we? It's just been pants. It's not, I don't think anyone's fished, or the nation has not fished really well since, well, September, August.
I'll tell you where normally does fish this time of year is Orchid, and I've not seen any catch reports from there either.
That's normally. I'm sure I saw a picture of a 33-pound common that Marsh Prattley posted.
Your syndicate lake has done a load of fishing in the last 3 days, hasn't it?
It's done a few. I've not actually been down there myself, so don't know exactly what's been out, but I know it has done one of the lumps at 46.
Wow. And a couple of 30s as well, you said. So, yeah, it has turned on. I would have definitely gone this week, except I just looked at the weather for down south and it's back in the minuses again. So it just looks like a freak sort of low-pressure storm that came, stirred the fish up with some big winds, and then... back to being crap. It was this week last year I had a lump out of Nashi. Well, it was last week actually. It flashed up on my Facebook that I had that 51 out of the Cops Lake. And that was on a... That had been cold then for a few weeks and was on a low pressure. And it was exactly the same a day as when we had all this weather this time. So, if that's coincidence or not. You know,
speaking of coincidences, can you remember what the moon phase was?
No. We can obviously look, though. I'm pretty sure last year was a new moon. I don't know what it was this time. I'm sure we can find out.
I've got my phone. I'm going to look for you right now.
Yeah.
And prove it's all rubbish.
Yeah.
It's so much rubbish. I've got an app on my phone so I can look at it. And, well, was it, did you say 6th of Feb? Was it this day last year or a couple of days ago?
No, I think it was Thursday or Friday last week, which was, what, the 24th, was it?
Well, it's 25th. 6 today, so 2 weeks ago then.
25th of January, yeah.
25th of Jan, where are we?
27th of Jan.
27th of Jan, that was the day before the new moon. Oh, hang on. That was 2 weeks ago. I'm on the wrong year.
Yeah, 27th of Jan, 2017 is new moon.
Yeah.
Well, and we got a low pressure with it and warm weather.
On Jan last year, 27th was 3 days after a full moon. So not really the waning gibbous.
Gibbous. The two best times, if you go by the moons, are the full moon and the new moon, aren't they? So,
or could it be the weather that they bring?
Well, that's what I think it is. I think it's conditions, but I think obviously the moon does control some conditions. So, very, very interesting. But I would have gone. I mean, it's all down to the weather at the minute for when and where I fish.
Have you not done any fishing yourself? You know, you mentioned that you were planning on making return visits down to the Cops, were you? Or
it's not panned out right. I've got a hell of a lot on with the Northern Angling Show this week. We've been in meetings all the time.
Well, I've seen your list of exhibitors. It looks like you've been busy.
Yeah, well, it's Nick Reedy that's been super busy on that. He's the one that deals with exhibitors. But I'm doing a lot of the advertising marketing this year. We've set up having like a huge screen in the entrance hall, like the same size screen that's on the main stage. We're having in the entrance lobby, and we're selling advertising on it. As well as like you can have page in the show brochure and leaflets and stuff, and there's only like 30 slots on it, so, and it's gone mad. It's like the easiest sales job I've ever had. People want to be on that screen and in the show brochure and stuff. So basically been dealing with that over the last week. We're organizing the party. We're having a party on the Saturday night, which I'm sure you'll be attending, will you not?
More than likely. I'm sure they'll serve a nice sparkling water for me.
Yes. Oh yeah, you're not drinking, are you? Yeah, it's not like a late night do. It's going to sort of get going when the show starts winding down about half four on the Saturday. We've got Clive Gibbons Band, which are a rock band. They're playing. We've got half the Carp Society supergroup. So it's basically Jacko, myself, Clive Gibbons, and do you know Trafford Sam Turrow? It's had a few big commons, including the Tatton one.
Yeah, the name rings a bell, but I don't know him.
He's a very accomplished musician himself. He's been in, you know, bands that have been signed. He's played, done big gigs at like the O2 and stuff, supporting, you know, bigger bands. But yeah, we're going to set up more of a northern carp band. Obviously, Clive's from up north. I think Jacko's still going to come and play bass. You can play bass. He's going to come.
Can I make a request?
Yeah.
In tribute to Black Sabbath, as they have just completed their last ever tour, played their last ever live gig, you've got to do a Sabbath song.
We are doing Paranoid, I think. We are doing it. I mean, I may even pick... What's another Sabbath song you really like?
Well, personally, I like a bit of Children of the Grave.
Oh, yeah. War Pigs.
I've got a proper... Yeah, but Children of the Grave, the riff for that is just... it's brilliant. You've got to know it in your head now.
Yeah, I know. I've got the first three Sabbath albums in a box set that I've had for years. A War Pigs is always my favourite. Gemmels gathered in the masses. Yeah, no Ozzy Osbourne, but yeah, that's cool. So yeah, we've got a Northern Carp supergroup with honorary Southern member Jacko coming down. he'll be playing. Then Clive Gibbons' his band are going to play afterwards, and they're like a proper band that won't be messing up quite as much as maybe we do. So this is all happening on the Saturday evening at the Northern Anglian show. It's free to come to the party. You just obviously have to have been in the show. We've got a bar room, got stage in there, and yeah, it's not going to go on late, maybe 8-9 o'clock at night, something like that, until we've had enough. But yeah, that's gonna be kicking off after the show. So all booked in. We had meetings with Heineken, who are putting the bar in for us. So yeah, it's just no fishing time, but it's all good. We're under 8 weeks till the Northern Anglian show now. If you don't know about it, it's the 1st and 2nd of April. You can get tickets at northernanglianshow.co.uk, or you can pay on the door. I think it's a tenner. It's very slightly cheaper if you buy online beforehand, and you also get in an hour earlier. Loads and loads of stuff. We've got on the main stage, Lainey is talking for us. We've got Danny Fairbrass on the Sunday, Ali Hamidi and Dean doing the Monster Carp or Monster Fish, what's it called, the Coda program on TV, where they went. It was
Monster Carp and Big Fish Off were the two they did.
Yeah, they're doing a Monster Carp presentation. Obviously we've got the usuals, Alan Blair, Derek the Don Ritchie is coming as well. He's going to do his, he's got this, it's more of a comedy show than a fishing show that he does. It's like it's based around News at 10, and he takes the piss out of everybody in fishing pretty much. So I'm looking forward to that. We've got the usual match forums. Got a mega tank this year with fish in it. Like, it's costing us thousands. There's all sorts of stuff going on. The show's twice as big as last year. I think we were 7,000 square metres last year. We're like 12,500 this year. It's huge. There'll be a VIP carp holiday stand, which is my holiday company that's we've started this year. The Carp Cast will have a stand. Hopefully Mark's going to be there. I think Reese is going to come down and help us, the web designer, and Heapy Bob, who manages our social media. So if you want to come and say hello to all the Carp Cast people behind the scenes, then it's a good place to do it. Come and say hello to us on either the Saturday the 1st or Sunday the 2nd. We will be there both days. Obviously, Saturday's got the added advantage of having a few beers with us in the sort of late afternoon, early evening. So, yeah, it looks like being a decent crack this year. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to it.
I've got a suggestion.
Go on.
Yeah, you've just mentioned you're going to have a big tank in there. Do you think Rob Hales will let you borrow a big rig for the weekend?
That'd be ace, wouldn't it? Yeah, that'd be
really can see fun. What a 70 looks like swimming about.
Yeah, we've been struggling to get the fish in it, actually, this year. But we've had koi in. When we built ponds in the past, we've had koi in there because the legal rules on moving fish and stuff are different for koi than what they are for, like, general course fish. They come under a different category. Obviously you need a section 30 and all sorts of regulations for normal fish, but yeah, we're working on that because we want a bit of everything in there. You know, we want tench, carp,
bream,
and bream. Yeah, we'll definitely have some bream for you. We'll see if you can tickle them out.
Oh, I'll just walk around and they'll follow me, the damn things.
Yeah, there you go. They'll be jumping out the tank to get behind you.
Yeah, I'll be fighting him off with a shitty stick.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. So Clearwater Fisheries are sponsoring the party as well, and the catering area in the show. So if you want to meet all the chaps from Clearwater, who have been very good to both the Northern Angling Show and the Carpcast, then come and say hello to Alex and the gang. I believe he's got a few of his promo girls there as well. In a male dominated area, then there might be some nicer things than men in camo to look at. Who knows? If you haven't checked out Clearwater Fishery, by the way, as I'd mentioned earlier, it did a decent 30 earlier in the week. Alex has spent tons on that place making it right. I went up there for a meal with Heapy Bob. We went up for breakfast the other morning. Food is amazing in the cafe, and the fishing, they're doing a lot of work on it at the minute, just putting this bund in that they've had to put in because of where the otter fence is and stuff. They've got massive plans with it. They've been building the swims. Everything's designed, you know, with the fisherman in mind. And it started doing a few fish. He spent best part of $100,000 on fish stockings over the winter. There's fish to over £40 in there already. There's loads and loads of 30s. And there is not better facilities in the Northwest, I don't think. And you're going to be hearing a hell of a lot about Clearwater over the next 12 months. We've got quite a few things planned down there, including Carpcast socials. I've been speaking to Rob Hughes about doing a very special event on Clearwater this year as well, which I hope is going to go ahead. I'm not allowed to say what it is yet, but it very good chance it'll be televised on BT Sports. Yeah, there's tons of stuff. So if you want to check out the Clearwater Fisheries Facebook page, or just go up there and have a look. It's a day ticket fishery this year. There's Runs Waters on there. There's a few smaller lakes, Coarse Lakes, Match Lakes, and obviously Specialist Carp Water. So yeah, definitely go and check it out. Talking to Rob Hughes and On the Bank, which is a TV show that he does on BT Sports. You can get the BT Sports app with a lot of EE. Phone contracts these days. I've got mine, and it's free. And if you have Virgin Media as well, you get BT Sports free with most of the packages. But yeah, he sent me a list of what's on in February. What day are we on now, Mark? Is it?
We're on the 6th of Feb.
6th, yeah. So tonight, which you won't know about because this won't be out by tonight, I wouldn't have thought. But yeah, 7 p.m. BT Sports 2, it's Match Fishing, Team England silver medal performance at the World Feeder Fishing Champs from Serbia. I'm sure it'll be repeated as well. 13th of Feb, it's Match Fishing again. You catch up with the Wales epic gold medal performance and England silver medal performance at the European Fishing Champs in Holland. The following week, the 20th, it's Team England's performance at the World Fishing Champs in Bulgaria. You can see why Rob's a busy man, isn't he? He's been out at all these places filming and presenting. The 22nd of Feb is the next carp fishing on TV. You can see the finals of the 2016 British Carp Angling Championship from Raisbury. It was Mark Bartlett and Kev Hewitt won that one. Spoiler alert. Very sorry. And the following week, the 6th of March, is the On the Bank magazine show. Andy Forbes and Rob Hughes having a bit of a crack at the rivers, before the end of the conventional close season. I had my rod licence renewals the other day, actually, Mark, if you had yours.
I've not, no, but I know they do at the end of the March. I'll never forget them. Well, not again, anyway. That's another story.
Really? Did you get nicked?
Yeah, I got caught with them, and well, without them, sorry, but I was a teenager at the time, so I've had one every year since, and I think I've been checked about twice. But then again, I do tend to fish out of the way places, so you get on the day ticket mainstream venues and expect the bailiff to be tapping on your shoulder.
Well, yeah, I mentioned the holiday company, VIPCarpHolidays.com. We've got a fantastic villa on the River Lot, owned by Jim Lightfoot. We've got a couple of weeks left this year. There's a few weeks from October onwards, but we've got the 15th of April is still available for a week. There's a week early May, and then that's pretty much it. So we're mainly looking at 2018 now, but it's all because it's a villa with a swimming pool, great fishing. There's all mixed fishing there, as well as big carp to £50, catfish to over £100. There's all sorts of predators, pike and zander in there. And really good mixed fishing, but the fact that there's a villa that sleeps up to eight, a private fishing bank, and a swimming pool, it's perfect for families. So if you're thinking of booking, I mean, most of the school holidays are gone, well, they're all gone this year, but they seem to be the most popular ones that are going. And the same with Saint Amand, which is also a farmhouse in France. Again, sleeps 10 people, games room, loads of facilities, and private lay with big carp to £50 in as well. It seems to be that with these more family-based holidays, that everybody wants the holiday weekends, the school holiday weekends and summer holidays and stuff. So most of them are gone for this year, but I suggest that you start having a look at 2018 now. You can go to the website vipcarpholidays.com or have a look at the two fantastic venues on the Facebook page, which is VIP Carp Holidays again. But yeah, I would strongly suggest, if you're thinking, you're going to have to think ahead for these ones and have a look at the 2018 dates on there, because both places are absolutely fantastic. And it's the sort of place I've been looking for years, and now we have a couple of them available to us. Ben Smethurst actually did a live on the bank feature, didn't he, from St. Amand?
He did.
Was it in the Steve Briggs episode?
It was, I'm thinking 48, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, so just look for the Steve Briggs episode if you're going back over them. We have another lake on there as well, which is a typical French big fish water where you can just rent the whole lake. There's no house or anything on this. It's just a standard one. And there is availability this year, June, July and August. The lake normally closes during June, July and August. He's opening it for the first time this year, which is why there are weeks available. So again, you can book that or inquire on the vipcarpholidays.co.uk website. Yeah, go and check that out. Have you seen anything else on the net, Mark?
Yeah, I've seen something that was a bit saddening, really. The British Young Carp Anglers Championship has been cancelled after 14 years.
Wow, didn't say why.
Yeah, it's largely due to participant numbers falling and the overall logistics involved.
That's a shame.
So are the young'uns just not fancying match fishing or match carp fishing at the moment? Or, I mean, 14 successful years, and I can't think of the names at the minute, but I believe some of the young lads who are younger than anyone younger than us is young. And, the lads who were regulars in the magazines and been working in the trade have come through the British Young Carp Anglers Championship. So it's a shame to see it go.
Yeah, that is a shame. I'm wondering if somebody will take it over. Obviously, the British Carp Angling Championships, the normal ones, were bought out. It was created by Rob Hughes. And you know what happens, the creator, the person that's passionate about something, is the one that runs it best. And quite often when businesses move on or get sold on or whatever, sometimes they're just never quite the same. With new owners, that probably have different motivations or ideas, and the person that created it is obviously the brains behind something. And quite often, I'm not saying in this case, but I do wonder if it would have been cancelled after 14 years if Rob Hughes still owned it. I would wonder. I don't know. Maybe somebody else will take over. There's certainly going to be a gap in there, because I know as a kid, you're definitely more keen as a young'un than you are when you're a bit older and you've got other responsibilities and stuff. The only match fishing I did was when I was young, fish for the county and stuff, Cheshire, when I was 13, 14, 15, whatever, police matches, if you remember, the old inter-county police matches. So yeah, be a real big shame. One thing, just going back to the Northern Angling Show, we're offering free school trips this year. So talking about the youth, if you go to a school where there's a few anglers, or maybe your sports teacher or one of the teachers is a keen angler, We're offering free entry to organised trips at the Northern Angling Show from schools. We're working with Rob Hughes on this, on the Get Out There, Get Fishing scheme that is a government-backed scheme. So we're doing it in association with that. So yeah, just as a as an aside, if you belong to a school, mention it to your teacher. If you know there's a teacher that's keen on fishing, you're based in the Northwest area or any area that's prepared to run a coach trip to the Northern Angler Show, then it won't cost them anything, and we'll look after the teachers or supervise on the trip as well. We'll feed them and water them and stuff, just as a way to promote fishing to the young'uns. Have we seen anything else on the net, Mark?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Well, I did see what we mentioned up earlier on that you wanted to put in. Beth Clifford posted a picture of herself looking rather nice after a trip to a hairdresser she was giving a shout out to.
It's a funny subject, this. I mean, we're in a very male-dominated sport, and you've got an extremely attractive a lady who puts herself out there in the industry, such as Bev, and you know, Q 300 comments, with some of them being creepy. a lot of them seem to have been deleted now, but I mean anyone on my friends list, any attractive girl that posts a picture of himself or a selfie, you know, I'd always cringe at the comments underneath. But you know, some girls seem to like attention. It makes them feel good, they like being appreciated. And I've seen some women post pictures and somebody's put something, oh, looking great, or whatever, and it's like, you know, kind of like looked at with disdain. And some people just blatantly cross the line, and I don't know. I mean, Bev's very thick skinned. We've interviewed Bev on the Carpcast, you know, and I don't think she minds too much. But Crowe did come on there and say that, you know, there is a line, and I've seen Bev uncomfortable at work, you know, at some stuff. And we know when we interviewed, was it Charlie, what's her name?
Charlie Buns back in Carpcast 1.
Yeah, you know, she was saying that, you know, she gets some weird messages, you know, people sending dick pics, and I don't know if she specifically sent that, and people, you know, people just blatantly saying, like, do you want to go for a session and a fuck? It's just like, yeah, that's clearly across the line, you know, like, men have different sex drives to women. Not saying all women don't have the same sex drive as men, but, you know, certainly, how can I best describe this without sounding misogynistic myself, but you know, men think about sex first, where I think women tend to think about developing relationships before, you know, it's a bigger picture for them. Where, and so I don't know, some things are just blatantly creepy. Like, you know, has anybody ever pulled a girl by, you know, posting a creepy comment under a picture? Like, no. But then you also get like the social justice warriors, the people that are like, oh, she's a lady with feelings, you know, like, you know, as if they're the police of all the creepy guys. Like, again, as part of the mating ritual to try and make themselves look good. Like, it's just as bad as the guys posting the creepy comments, the social justice warriors saying, whoa, send easy, lads, you know, this is a girl with feelings. Like, I always think they're just as bad. They're just having a different angle, as if, as say, the social justice warrior angle of I'm the internet police. So it's all a bit uncomfortable. Obviously Bev's got, you know, Bev's from Yorkshire, isn't she? So she's very thick-skinned, but again, I'm pretty sure there is a line, and I can only imagine what it's like to be an attractive girl, or any girl in fishing, in a very male dominated industry. You know, you're gonna get all sorts of craziness, because there's a lot of batshit crazy people out there generally, aren't there? You know, we know just the punishes we get.
Yes, you've had plenty of fun with them lately.
Yeah, you know, that there are people out there that you know, seem to just be you know, a boilie short of a kilo, or whatever fishing analogy we can use. But yeah, you know, but Bev did look lovely. My comment, which I hope hasn't been construed as creepy, was she's like a fine wine, because she does seem to keep improving with age. So, but yeah, you know, props to Bev for putting the pictures on. I'm sure she expects a certain reaction, and there always is. But yeah, you creepy bastards, then rein it in, you know. And just as bad, you social justice warriors that, you know, are trying to gain your own props by having a go at the creepy ones again. That's just as bad, I think, in my opinion.
Well, the only thing I'll really add to this is anyone who you know, follows Bev on social media, well, know what she does for fun. She goes running 80 miles in the hills for fun. And there's a good chance she could kick the ass of every single one of us.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. She does the cold showers. We're still awaiting my creepy request for a cold shower tape.
Well, that's a 180.
Well, you know, it's... I'm probably as... I think I'm inherently misogynistic, as in I don't intend to be, but for maybe just my age and manliness.
Can you spell misogynistic?
Yeah, probably. If I had to, I was good at spelling. You've asked the wrong person there, but yeah, that was one of my strengths, being a geek. But yeah, I don't know. There's a very fine line between banter and just being downright offside, and I probably cross it myself many times, but I like to try and be aware. I'm quite open to being pointed out, you know, if I do, you know, hurt somebody's feelings, or, you know, be any way that can make somebody else feel bad. I think as we get older, become more aware of this sort of thing, you know, of being self-aware and being aware of things that you say that can be construed or can hurt somebody else's feeling or make them feel inadequate or put somebody down. And I definitely do it. I know I do it, and it's not intentional because I want to hurt somebody or make somebody feel inferior or whatever. You know, it's not usually deliberate. Occasionally it is if somebody's pissed me off, but I'd like to think that I'm open-minded enough, even at 40 odd years old now, to be aware and always trying to be a better person. You know, we get feedback, don't we? Especially in our industry, we put ourselves out there. You know, there's forums where people sit there and slag us off regularly because we, you know, we do something in the public domain. So I fully expect you know, there's a natural feedback loop, and that if we say something's out of order, somebody's going to post it on a forum calling us out because we do what we do in public. So I'm quite happy that that is the case, because it only improves us as people, because you know, I only judge life by the experiences that I've had and then the feedback that you get from that.
Unless we ever get told that we go off tangent too much, which just means we'll go even more off tangent. There's a point.
There is a point where I don't give a flying fuck, because, you know, this is our show, this is our mouthpiece. We try and do good with it. We try and entertain people. We try and give people some knowledge. And we also wouldn't be doing it if we weren't the sort of people that had an opinion we wanted to express. And if that happens to wander into other stuff, from ice baths to Lord knows what, then it is our it is your prerogative to fast forward it, and it's our prerogative to do it in the first place. So that is something that will never change. This is hopefully entertaining. Hopefully some people gain some stuff from the other stuff we talk about. But, you know, we do try and talk about fishing as much as we can.
I'm thinking we should actually talk about fishing, because we've done next to none of it so far on this 45-minute long podcast.
Okay, then. Let's welcome in Tim Paisley. Let's start with that. First of all, let me officially welcome probably one of the godfathers of carp angling, media mogul, and all-round nice guy, Mr. Tim Paisley, to the Carpcast. So you, welcome. You mentioned the funeral yesterday. For those that don't know, somebody who was instrumental in the Carp Society in the early days, just like yourself, was Mr. Baz Griffiths. Barry Griffiths sadly passed away, and it was his funeral yesterday, I believe.
Yeah, it was nice to. It was sad occasion, obviously, as funerals are. But Barry made a big contribution to the Carp Society over many years. He was a regional organiser for Birmingham for well over 20 years, I think. And it was I was the first secretary, and Barry was the second at the start of the carp society in the 80s. So I'm very, very keen carp angler, terrific carp angler. Sadly, taken ill, went very, very quickly. So everyone got together at the funeral yesterday. Family was there, a lot of faces I hadn't seen for a long, long time. Kevin Ellis came up from Essex, bless him, another all-round good guy. So touching occasion, very sad. I'm croaking a bit today because we were catching up with old friends, and I talk far more than I'm prone to as a rule, because I work from home, rarely see anyone apart from when I go down the office. So I think my larynx is slightly strained today. But yeah, Barry was a great, great guy, very, very sad. We've all got to go sometime, and we've lost a lot of people over the last year. So yeah, we've put Barry to rest, and a good guy gone.
I met Barry when I was about 14 or 15 years old, and this is a testament to the good he did for the sort of youth of fishing. I mean, I was a keen carp angler, a teenager, and we were actually on holiday in the old close season at Lower Tamar Lake in Devon. And we were there for a week, as it was one of the only places you could fish at that time in the close season then, as you probably remember. They didn't have a close season down there. And Baz was in the next swim to me, and he was my gilly for the week. I still have the photographs that he took now. I don't think he caught a fish, and I was catching quite a lot. And at the end of the week, he offered to come and pick me up from my home, which was in the Cotswolds at the time, which is, you know, a good 45 minutes from him in Birmingham, offered to come and collect me and take me to Horseshoe for the junior fishing that was happening just after that. And, you know, this guy was a total stranger. You know, that's what a good guy he was.
Well, it's surprising how many tales there have been like that appeared on Facebook, you know, the good that he did, things from his past that we just didn't know anything about. Very talented guy. I mean, I was surprised that he was a table tennis champion, he was a folk singer. And all he ever talked about was carp fishing when I knew him. So, yeah, remarkable fella.
Yeah, what a lovely fella, and sad to hear him passing away. But he caught some kippers in his time. He was, you know, on one of the exclusive Frampton syndicates. I'm sure you know much more than me, but yeah, maybe this is a fitting tribute here, because we did discuss his passing away a couple of weeks ago on the Carpcast. But you know, there's nobody better to remember him than yourself, I guess, going back.
Well, Greg Fletcher particularly, because they stayed friends, they fished together a lot. I would keep up really with Baz's adventure through Fletch. I mean, Greg and I founded the Carp Society in 81. We went our own ways for a long, long time, but we see each other about once a month for a drink and a catch. And we've got identical sense of humour. You know, when you've got people that you spark off, and you only got to say a couple of words and we're off and running. And it's just occasionally we meet people like that. And so, yeah, I've kept abreast of what Baz has been up to through Fletch. And of course, that was a big part of all the talking yesterday.
So you were the founding member of the Carp Society. You started it, basically. We'll go into the sort of more recent Carp Society now. But, I mean, what inspired you to do that? Did you just see that there was a need for some sort of organisation?
There were all sorts of rifts at the time. I mean, the late Peter Moran, I wouldn't say I was ever friendly with Peter, but we became accepting of each other late in his life, and of course we lost him the year before that. And he was, his organisations were run his way, and he ran the BCSG and the CAA. The eruptions in the northeast over the BCSG at one bit, and then I was starting to see something of Rod Hutchinson, and it was Rod Hutchinson who first said to me, perhaps you should start another carp organisation. And I've just written it up for the Carp Society website, actually, and it was a sort of who me moment, you know, because I was just totally in awe of him and Yatesy and Bruce Ashby and other huge names at the time in the 70s. So this was in the late 70s. And at the time, when he first said it, I thought, well, you know, because there's some aggro around, it isn't really a reason to start another carp organisation. But what finally triggered it was that the NSA, which was the ruling body at the time, suddenly brought out a rule about the banned live baiting. And it took everyone completely by surprise. And obviously, live baiting didn't affect carp anglers, but it made us aware of what could happen if you weren't involved in politics at a national level, which carp anglers weren't. And even the NASG were taken by surprise by this. So the new organisation was partly to counteract Peter's policies, but also to provide a political body, because Peter was avowedly apolitical. He didn't want his organisation to be in politics involved, and he didn't want to be involved in politics. So part of the remit for the Carp Society starting was political, which has gone a bit by the board with the deposed regime that was still battling it. But you know, the Carp Society has to be a political body. And in the last few years, we've had the PAG, I'm chairman of the PAG, all entirely voluntary, you know, working through our office, through home, through various homes, very, very committed people to rethink the CACG. But hopefully, when this is all resolved, we go back to the Carp Society being the focal point of carp fishing. I mean, to some extent, the deposed regime carried on what we did for over 20 years, in that they built the HQ on Horseshoe, which was always the objective. But then it all went wrong when they tried to find a way of selling it for their own benefit, you know, which is what the battle has been going on over the last year about. Very expensive business, but, you know, they couldn't be allowed to get away with that. I mean, you can safely lose that, because we've established now that they did try to find a way of selling Horseshoe Bay. We've got it in print, and that is the basis for the legal battle, because we felt they should go. They felt they should stay. The law is on our side. It's just a question of, you know, arriving at a solution.
I was a member of the Carp Society and the CAA as a teenager, really keen. I had no idea about the conflicts between the two. I completely agree with why you did what you did. You had the foresight clearly to see that there needed to be a political organisation, somebody shouting for our rights. I mean, what were the things that you disagreed with the CAA? I mean, I didn't realise there was a battle, if it were.
Well, Peter made up his own rules as he went along. There were no rules until he broke a rule, and then there was one. I mean, Derek Stritton was exiled. He was actually a regional organiser for the BCSG. Wasn't allowed to go to his own meetings. So a lot of this I didn't even know until the Carp Society started up. There was Peter Evans was the secretary for the North East branch. Peter Moore didn't like Peter Evans, and he banned him from the organisation, which is why Rod made the suggestion to me about another organisation. So it was an accumulation of a lot of little things, really, that became an irritation. The BCSG and the CAA were non-accountable. I know there was a row about that at an AGM once. Bruce Ashby wrote it up, you know, we should see the accounts. And Peter was just dictatorial in terms of, and that's not a criticism, you know, that was Peter's way with his organisations. So the Carp Society was born to be democratic, accountable, political. And in that sense, it was set aside from Peter's organisations. You know, it was different. It went down avenues that he wasn't willing to go down. So it wasn't just, we don't like what you're doing. It needed to cover areas that weren't being covered. And that is what it will increasingly do. Now we've got it back along the lines, or we'll have it back along the lines that it should have gone along.
It sounds like the carp community was quite small in those days. You mentioned all the sort of the big names at the time, you know, from Peter Mohan to the Bruce Ashby, yourself, Rod, all the classics, you know, most of whom I heard of from reading books, you know, when I was at school. But was it quite a close community back then? I mean, did you all speak?
There were very few. I mean, you know how little published material there was. in those days. You know, you would get one carp angle, one carp article in a Coarse Fishing magazine, be it Coarse Fisherman or Coarse Angler at that time. It might be miraculous if you got two, but it was a minority pursuit and seen as a minority pursuit in those days. So there wasn't the avenue to have published work, which meant that you'd got a limited number of superstars, because superstars are created by the media, obviously. So, and I've just written about that recently in Cartwheel. So these people were, I suppose gods is the wrong word, but Hutchinson and Yates and a handful of others, they were the superstars of that era. Walker still, I mean, he wasn't carp fishing, but Walker was the pivotal point of where it all came from. And the carp, Kev Clifford, was one of the superstars of the time. But I would imagine you could count up to 10 and say they were the superstars, where now you can probably count up to 100. And so I was very much in awe of these people, and I wasn't one of the names. I became a name through writing and through the Carp Society, really. And then there comes a point when you think, well, I better try and catch something. So I suppose my writing spurred my carp fishing activities, really, from that time on.
We'll go into your accomplishments, sort of fishing wise, from the World Cup and stuff. But I mean, was it the lack of media for carp fishing that incentivised you to start Carp World and the publications? Or?
It was growing. I mean, the Carp Society, we started Carp Fishing Magazine, which was hugely influential. Carp Fishing Magazine had a massive impact, and that was created. I was the first editor. Mike Wilson and Dave Watson put it together, and we were all bowled over about what we got. I mean, membership brought you two magazines a year, two carp fishes a year, and that was what triggered the Carp Society growth. I mean, I've just been doing a piece for the website. By the end of the second year, there were over 800 members, which, going back to that time, is a lot of bodies. You know, that's a high percentage of the people who were carp fishing at that time. But just around that time, to me, there was an explosion. Kevin Maddock's book, Carp Fever, came out. Rod's book, Rod Hutchinson's Carp book, came out in 1981. Carp Fisher came out in 1981. Carp Fisher triggered Carp Catcher through the CAA. And that was the start of the explosion, because suddenly, from that one article per month in a magazine, you'd suddenly got magazines and books on carp fishing. I mean, when I got really serious in the early 70s, and you're looking around for a book, and there was Peter Mullen's Carp for Everyone, Jim Gibbinson's 1968 book, and then the one they brought out in 74, and I think that was the only technical book there was through the 70s, until Reds and Kevs came out. So it suddenly, from 1980, it exploded, and I could see that happening through the 80s, you know, and I expected Moan and Maddox to bring out a magazine, to be honest. I thought there was a niche here, and I wanted to do it. I could see it growing. I got anxious about it. I went to see a distributor. He liked Carp Fisher. He knew it was possible because of that. So really, Cartwheel was triggered by Carp Fisher. I took the idea of Cartwheel to the Carp Society. No, they were happy with that. To a year, they would stick with that. You know, I had their blessing to go my own way. I always remember, because it was a guy called Hilton Lacey from Berkshire, who specialised in specialised magazines, if you like, real specialty magazines. And he took on Cartwheel. Yes, he'd have a go at launching Cartwheel, but there was resistance in W.H. Smith's wholesale. As you know, it's like the wholesale and the retail of W.H. Smith. And we had to wait. I had to wait 9 months for someone to retire, because he knew he could get it past the next bloke, but not the bloke who was in place then. So all the time I was anxious about someone else coming up with the idea of Cartwheel. You know, so Cartwheel in September 88 was the first newsstand carp magazine. You know, so there was a sort of a further explosion from there. Suddenly carp fishing and how to do it, and the stars of carp fishing, it was becoming available to everyone.
How have you seen, looking from a media point of view, how have you seen that change with, you know, YouTube being so big now, you know, that there's all sorts of forms of media, from, you know, obviously you've gauged it, you've seen the boom happen. I mean, carp fishing is almost like, you know, even 10 years ago, I didn't really admit to people you're a carp angler. You know, if I met a girl in a bar out working DJing or whatever, you know, I didn't mention the fishing. Whereas, you know, on Facebook, it's people's profile picture. People are proud. It's a way of life now. I mean, it always was for the keen people, but it's, you know, it's a proud way of life. People are happy.
I would say that it changed through the 90s.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Kurt Wilkerman in 88. David Hall used to ring up every, have you lost your shirt? Yeah, he was expecting our world to go under any time now. Suddenly realised he'd missed out. He realised he'd missed out even more when we brought Carp Talk out, because it was Kev Clifford, Chris Ball and myself who launched Carp Talk. You know, I was involved in that at that stage. And David Hall had always wanted a weekly. I think he tried to buy Angler's Mail at one bit.
Yeah.
You know, so David Hall brought out two carp magazines in the early 90s. Rob Mailing brought out Big Carp. So from having no newsstand carp magazines, he suddenly got four. You know, and it even built up slightly from there with Carpology coming out. So, and I think there was another one, I just forgot my
name. Carp Addict for a brief while, wasn't there? John Ballister's magazine.
Yeah. At one time there were six carp magazines, where like 5-6 years before there hadn't been any. So it was a huge difference. And you will remember the days when you fished with a float and whatever, and there was a rod standing there for carp that never actually did anything. And then it changed over to the other way around. There were two carp rods that would catch carp. I mean, you know, going back to the 80s, Lemmy Middleton's hair invention made a colossal difference.
Yeah.
Because carp became much more catchable. More carp waters were being stocked. So there was less and less secrecy, because through the 70s, the secrecy was massive. You know, you got one whisper about a bait ingredient, you'd get bait. You got one whisper about a bait ingredient, and then you tried to make that work, you know, and suddenly you could buy baits through Richworth and then Crafty Catcher.
Yeah.
There was the definite explosion from 1980-81 to me, and then a series of further tremors as life went by, you know, which made it more and more available to people, not just to carp fish, but to catch carp. And so that the mystery that existed through the carp catchers era and through into it started to disappear, and now, you know, you get the impression from the How to Do It carp magazines that if you don't go and catch a brace of 30s every session, you're a failure. And we know that ain't reality, but there are guys out there who do that and do it on sessions for publication. You know, it's just such a huge different world, carp fishing world, to the one that existed, 25 years ago.
Yeah, have you seen the change again then with the digital age, with this, you know, the, like I say, you can get apps on your phone telling you how to tie knots, to, you know, to podcasts like this on your iPhone?
I wouldn't say any of that has done us any favours, so I'm not going to labour it.
No.
No, I mean, it's doing people favours in terms of how to catch carp, but, you know, you see the trend that they don't have to buy magazines anymore to learn how to do it. You know, the social media is electrifying, but it's, you know, right across the board, it's damaged the publication industry, which was always going to happen. And I suppose, to be fair, Paul Selman forecasted in the late 90s, and I suppose it took longer to kick in than we expected. But yeah, no, I mean, carp fishing has now become fishing, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's the first port of call, isn't it? It's not the flow in the canal.
Which is a reversal of where we were 25 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's good because there's more people going, you know, it's more popular, but like you said, there's so many, it's the same in all forms of media now, you know, not just fishing. There's so many different places you can get content from, you know, other than, you know, having to go into WH Smith, or like you're saying, in the early days of waiting for a magazine every 6 months, which, you know, that was my first magazine, the Carp Society one.
And I mean, the internet is, because I'm doing a couple of books on bait at the minute, and I've always had this thing about the theory of bait, you know, chemoreception and gustation and the rest of it. And as a research medium, internet is just utterly extraordinary. Because where I was having to buy a book here and a book there through the late 70s and 80s and trying to piece this whole picture together, you now just look something up on the internet, yeah, and every book in the world is available to you. It's an extraordinary medium. I don't know how they do it, to be honest. I sit here with my Facebook, make notes of, I mean, iPad, make notes on that, send it downstairs to my office, onto my hard drive, you know, and then carry on with me writing there. And it's a different world, isn't it? Absolutely different world. And then people now take what we've got for granted. And those of us who, I mean, at each stage, you know, the first books I did would be in longhand and then typed out. And I mean, Pip, the office professor, when she wanted to do an e-book of one of my first books, oh, have you got the disc, Tim? I said, well, no. No, I haven't got the disc because there wasn't a disc in 1988, because you wrote it out long and then you typed it, and then you typed it again. So I've just been reading Charlotte Bronte's life again,
yeah,
and it talks about, you know, her first book, and then she made a fair copy. In other words, she wrote it out again as the fair copy of the original manuscript. And I know I'm going back to kind of 200 years there, but 150 years. But you know what I mean? The creating things, and it is now so easy, in inverted commas, to publish a book compared to publishing a book just 20 years ago.
Well, you mentioned the Brontes. I mean, my mum used to take me to visit the Brontes house and stuff when I was young, but it's not too long before that. I mean, there was an anti-book brigade, full stop. The educated people didn't want books to be invented, much the same as people now saying, oh, you know, there's so much content on the internet for free and, you know, you've never had it so good. But, you know, there were people trying to stifle books being published, namely the Bible in the early days, because somebody used to make a lot of money. You know, the one person in the village that could read would make money by preaching the Bible to all the people that couldn't read, you know. All of a sudden it was took away from him when people started learning to read and books started being published and stuff. And, you know, it's the same sort of thing. We evolve, don't we? Things move on. And, you know, you're talking about hard drives and iPads and stuff. And, you know, I'm sure there's not many people who've been around for as long as you that are as technically literate as yourself. So you seem to have adapted really well yourself.
Well, yeah, you have to. And to start with, I suppose, I mean, I always remember when the internet first came, or email first came on, it showed this four on the tee at golf.
Yeah.
You know, one of the commercials. Oh, no, I won't be using email. I was one of those. And then when you start, you know, and particularly changing something, I mean, that is the huge thing. If you change something, you know, because I'm a great rewriter, an avid rewriter, or change a word or whatever. So that would need Charlotte Bronte's fair copy, because I had three books through Crowood. You're sending off to Crowood, you send off a tight script, probably the last one, To Catch a Carp, that might have been on disc, but certainly the first two, Carp Fishing and Big Carp, they would be typed down, all the pictures numbered and whatever. So if you're doing the final read of a chapter in those days, and then you thought, I don't like the look of that paragraph, now you just cut and paste it, or take it out and put another one in there or whatever. That is an extraordinary difference, because if you change a chapter in the old days, you had to do the fair copy.
Yeah.
Do your changes on what you've written already, then retype the whole damn thing. Pardon my French. Retype the whole thing because you've made a change. That's changed dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was at school in the 80s. I started carp fishing in sort of 82, and I remember just word processors being a big deal. You know, we take it for granted now. As I said, everybody's got a laptop, an iPad. You just want to change something, you just change it. You know, it's that simple.
But,
you know, I mean, pre-word processor, it was written. Yes, I hadn't really thought about that for quite some time. I mean,
I really smiled when Pip came on to me and said, have you got the disc for him? I said, no, Pip, no. No, there wasn't a disc for that. It didn't exist.
I know. I mean, even through my era of carp fishing, it's the same when somebody, oh, you know, you're doing a magazine piece or whatever. It's like, oh, can you send an email us the pictures? And it's like, no, they were actually pictures. You know, it's,
that's right. Or yeah, Chinese. I mean, I do a lot of my stuff is reflective now, or partly reflective. So just my piece in Carp and the Carpagon piece, there'll be a lot of references to the past, and I've still got boxes of transparencies that I haven't had rescanned. I've got prints that have come in from all over the place, and then of course I've got all my desks. So I'll see a name, I'll think, now I've got a picture of him somewhere. So that can take like 2 days just looking for the picture of this guy that I know I've got somewhere, but I don't know whether it's in the trannies or in the prints or in the, you know, on the desks.
Yeah,
just amazing. And I've got my office downstairs, it was originally a snooker room, which was why Mary and I bought this house originally. It was a snooker room, and that is, I've now got over 1700 books. Wow. I don't just mean carp books, because I collect all sorts of books. And of course the internet, I was going to mention that just before, a books and Amazon, you know, the book sales, because I'm a great early riser. I'm like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I wake up thinking, I've just recently bought a signed copy of a Patti Smith book. Mm. And I woke up, I wanted a signed Patti Smith book. I wanted a book that Patti Smith had actually held.
Yeah.
And I looked through the American Aid books section, and there was, to my surprise, a limited edition of Just Kids, leather bound, limited edition, signed copy, and it arrived 2 days later.
Yeah.
From New York.
It took you years searching for a book like that. I mean, you know, I was a record collector.
You wouldn't have found it. If you had gone to America, you wouldn't have found it.
No, exactly. And it was the same with records. You know, I used to collect them, and I used to have a lot of rare ones and buy the imports and stuff, and, you know, search. And now, you know, you just look on eBay and there's 5 of them, you know, that can come on a next day delivery. It's
absolutely,
you know, that would take me years looking for before. It's exactly the same thing. But it's not been lost to the youth of today. I mean, my daughter's 16 and she won't read a book on her Kindle. She has to have a hard copy in her hand. And I think there's still a percentage of people like that. They want to feel the book. They want to hold it. You know, they don't just want to read it on an iPad or a Kindle or whatever. So I don't think it's gone. But I'm the same. I don't really like reading on my phone or on the iPad, to be honest. It's much easier to read a book, isn't it, I think?
Oh, I love books. Absolutely love them, yeah.
So can you remember your first carp? Can you remember that buzz of you know, getting snaps off? Or how did you end up being a carp angler?
Very influential, yeah. Yeah, that was in Loxley Valley, Sheffield. I was tench fishing. Fishing was just like an escape for me. A few hours. And it was May, and there was no close season on that one. This is back in the close season days, 70 or 71. And big red quill in the torch beam, big red flake. And like 10 times this float sailed out of the beam, and nothing. Nothing. What is going on here? Well, I thought they were tench. And like the 11th time, bang, all had a let loose. And I got 3-pound bear, pearl on, grey line, in this very weedy water with lily pads and whatever. And I caught this 6-pound something miller carp. And it struck a real chord with me straight away, because, you know, I mean, miller carp in particular, even more than commons, it's not a fish, it's that fish.
Yeah.
I mean, having fished for tench, where I didn't even know you could identify fish back then, and it was only just going, or sometime after, Terry Eustace in carp circles, wasn't it, that they were identifying fish. That was after this capture, and it was that fish, and it was as individual as me, that fish. And it really touched a chord in me. It wasn't that I was a carp fisher straight away. I was a carp lover straight away. And gradually the carp rod became the rod, and then it became 2 carp rods, and you know, it just started to take over my life. So yeah, very, very vividly. I mean, you vividly remember. I remember the first double from Snowbury on Lynching Meet, start of the season. I remember the first 20 from Cuttle Mill, and then especially the second 20 from Awatiu, you know, and Roman Lakes.
Yeah.
and 20s in those days was like every 2 or 3 years, not every 2 or 3 minutes.
I fished for many years before I fished a water, especially sort of my childhood was in the northwest, and then you know I fished many years, so I fished a water that had a double in it, and then many more years for a 20. I think I caught my 20 in first 20 and 30 in the same season from Woburn Sands. I'd moved back down to Bedfordshire again. You know, you can only catch what's in front of you, and you know, if you're in the north, you're a little less less luxurious.
I doubt,
As you'll know. But I mean, you went on to catching some monster fish. You started fishing abroad. Like, were you?
Well, I mean, yeah, it was strange how that came about. Really, you briefly touched on the World Cup. And I used to fish with John Lilly a lot, and for some reason John, he was banned from Fisherville, as is his wont, John, bless him, had fallen out with the owners, and I was going to fish in the World Cup of 2000, and I've just started going abroad. I mean, we've been doing the Fisherville trips, which were just social events. We're doing those through Cartwheel, and the 2000 World Cup, I was going to fish in that. And I rang Briggs up. I rang Steve Briggs. I didn't know well, knew him by reputation, and I'd met him. Would he like to fish with me in the World Cup? Yeah, we'll give that a go. So really, it was through fishing with Steve, and we won at Fisherville. And then we won on the St. Lawrence 5 years later, which was, I mean, that is the most remarkable event of my carp fishing life, because, I mean, it was a field of 110 pairs, on the St. Lawrence, and we went to make up the numbers. There wasn't a thought in our head that you'd win a second of these things, for heaven's sake. Mm-hmm. So we won at Fisherville, and it was through Steve, and then I went to Cassian, and got lucky at Cassian first time round. I had a really good result there, including half moon scale at £63. And he said, well, why don't you go to Reduta? So and I was terrified of flying. I mean, when I said goodbye to Mary to go to Reduta, I wasn't saying see you in a fortnight, I was saying goodbye. You know, I didn't think you'd get off the aeroplanes. I was terrified. Like, I've become more blasé about it now. You know, if it goes, at my age, if it goes down, it goes down. Well, I've got to go somehow. But those days, I thought, well, you know, you don't get to the other end in an aeroplane. So, yeah, I went to Reduta and I caught the biggest fish in the world in 2001. The big common at 73.13.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, it's bizarre when you start detailing these things, and I still look on myself to some extent as a dabbler who writes, which isn't very realistic, I know that. But compared to your layers and your Chilcots and the rest of it, I don't consider myself a carp catcher on their level, your tailends and the rest of it. I still see them as, like, you know, a step up in terms of catching carp. But I have got, I mean, I've had 70s from three different waters now. I had a burst from Tayats and then a burst from Celia last October. So occasionally, I keep plugging away, occasionally I get very, very lucky. And I think that is an encouragement to anyone, really.
Well, it must be a little bit more than luck. You know, you seem to catch these. But I mean, you glossed over it there pretty quickly, but let's just go back and think about the fact you won the World Cup twice. I mean, and one of them was, I'm sure that St. Lawrence was more of an endurance test than anything else. And I mean, if you don't mind me asking, how old were you when you won it on the St. Lawrence?
2005, what was it? 70? 68, maybe?
I mean, that's ridiculous. We know from match fishing these days, you know, it's hard graft, isn't it? Because, especially when you're fishing somewhere with a lot of fish, you've got to keep working. You know, the difference between, you know, keeping the energy up all through the night and was it night fishing as well, the St. Lawrence?
Yeah, but Fisherville and the St. Lawrence, they were both, both 5 day matches, you know, 24 hours, but either you do it or you don't do it. And I mean, there were a couple of American pairs. I mean, we had a really good peg on the St. Lawrence, don't get me wrong, but I would say there were maybe 20 pegs could have won it in that area. But the Americans were reeling in at night.
Right.
You know, and they weren't fishing overnight. Now, we had a couple of good nights on there. We had, I remember, we just, we get lucky there. Briggs is a brilliant. Briggs, he understands fish. He's like Rob Hutchinson. He understands fish. He understands the depth. Understands where he'll be. And just a great, great bloke to fish with. You know, just a doer. You just do it. You do whatever's to be done to do it. Which is still my, you know, my take on it. I mean, I need to sleep more than I used to. But I'm still an early riser, you know, so I would feel cheated if I woke up and it was daylight. you know, I'd love to see the start of each day. I'd love to have the kettle on before it gets light or when it starts to get light. But that particular one, it sticks with me because in advance we were all betting on what the result would be on the St. Lawrence, you know, coming up with fancy figures. In actual fact, I got it about right, and I went for about £1,600. So when we started off very slow, and then like the information wasn't free flowing, so we started off very slow. And it started on the Sunday, and we got through to Monday, and then we started to catch a few on the Monday. It was looking a bit better, and Big Dev Moore, one of the chief organisers, came to weigh us in the evening on the Monday. And I think we were up to 290-something pounds, from memory, 290-something pounds. And like, I'm doing the sums in my head, and I hadn't totted it up. I'm doing the sums in my head as we're weighing the fish we got to. And as Dave was going, I said, what's winning then, Dave? Thinking he'd say 500 or 600 pounds or whatever. He says, oh, the Americans are winning. You know, it's a big cock up. The Americans are winning. They've got 260 pounds. So I didn't say anything. So when he'd gone, I said to Biggsy, I said, Biggsy, I think we're in the lead. And in the morning, we got a text from Andy Chambers to say, you're in the lead, stay there. And the only real bit of luck we had in that, apart from the draw, which was a good draw, there were a couple of guys, students, that found out we were in the lead. They came into the swim about 8 o'clock on the Tuesday morning. And we're still on the tunnel. We might have caught a couple of fish overnight, I don't know. And we've come to do some filming. And we were catching like late afternoon, evening, and first thing in the morning, you know. So we said, well, you're a bit late, you know, action's over for the day. But all we can do is like show you what we're doing, baiting up, throwing stick and spudding and whatever, you know. So we spent half an hour this bombardment of bait for them to film so they could film something going on. And it just took off. And by that evening, we were over £1,000.
Wow.
And that was largely because these kids had come into film us on the Tuesday morning, and we'd done something we wouldn't have done if that would have trickled the bait in, but we wouldn't have that hammered it in as we did that day. So we went from like 284, whatever it was, on the Monday night, Tuesday morning, to over £1,000. And there was such a stir at HQ when they went back in. But we were running out of sacks, but we were using anything that looked anything like a sack to keep these fish, because you didn't have anyone with you, and as you know, they came like twice a day to where you're in. So you're having to find ways of retaining all these fish and, you know, look after them. So that, and we just never looked back after that. And this sounds like bragging, it's not. It's both events were more or less doubled the same weight.
Wow.
It was extraordinary.
And it was clearly just the baiting. Do you think that the carp was stopping to feed because they'd eaten everything?
We got them at it. We got them at it. We found they started to slow it down. I think part of the problem of fishing the St. Lawrence is they'll only stand for the ready-mades we were using for so long. You know, we were feeding feed, we were feeding empty, we were feeding whatever. But they will only go heavy on the. You need like a change of flavour on ready meats. I found that with the trips we used to make. If you're taking shelf life baits, there isn't enough food value to keep them feeding heavy for 5 days.
Yeah.
You know, you might get 2.5-3 days out of them, then they start to go off them. Then you need a change of flavour, and they think it's a new food, you know, before they learn the lesson all over again. So that was part of what we were doing. Change the bait, keep it going, and we worked. Like more than mosquitoes, which are a nightmare on the St. Lawrence, you know, you just had to do it, and we did it, and we were just utterly amazed that we'd win a second one. Absolutely amazed.
It's fantastic, and obviously I'm sure you're behind Rob, what he's doing with the England team now, trying to actually, you know, make the country behind, you know.
Well, he's such a crafter, isn't he? Yeah, well, I mean, I keep saying Robbie's taking too much on. He says, I know, but it's my nature. And I suppose to some extent, you know, with the PAG and the Carp Society thing that's been going on for a year and the rest of it and the writing. But I've been taking, ever since I read Fred Wilton in 81, whatever it was, 82, when it came out in the third BCSG book, ever since I read Fred Wilton that on nutrition, and I thought, well, if Carp need that, what do we need? Because
yeah.
I had no idea. I didn't know what a carbohydrate was, or a protein, or vitamins, or mineral. And as soon as I read up on what we needed, I thought, well, with the best food in the world, I ain't getting all that from my diet.
Mm.
You know, so I not only changed my food, I started taking vitamins and mineral pills, and then I started taking, like, I take plenty for anti-arthritis for the joints. I take brain food, ginkgo biloba and ginseng, which is supposed to feed the brain.
Yeah.
You know, so anything that's going out there that might prolong my activity, because, you know, when you're 20, 30, 40, you hear this saying, yeah, but I don't want to get old. You know, your has-been. No, you're only has-been if you can't do what it is you want to do.
Yeah.
And if you can still do what you want to do. I mean, I'm now getting a problem in the fish I'm fishing for. I can't even pick them up.
Mm.
You know, which is a bit daft. So sooner or later, I mean, that 78-13, I had that brace of 70s in October, and I'd more or less settled down to just read social session with the guys. That 78-13, that fired me up again. I've got all sorts going on this year, because this year, I'm 80 in August, and I want to catch an 80th this year. And I've just been talking to my mate, Tom Duncan Dunlop, just before you came on, and he said, I've got a couple of dates for Rainbow next year. I said, Tom, I ain't doing Rainbow again next year. I've got lucky in the bookings we've got for this year. We've got 2 weeks in 1 and 2, and then we've got 2 weeks in 18.
Yeah.
Which is great, because we've been going there for 12 years or whatever it is now. 12 years, yeah. But I haven't had a 7 different Rainbow. I've had 7 discs from 3 different waters. Haven't had one from Rainbow. So I'm keen to put that right, and if it could be an 80 or whatever. But I know that failure is part of carp fishing. You know, it's I love busy life, which I'm fortunate in that.
Yeah.
I really love busy life. I don't like the effort of getting ready. I don't like the effort of going. I so admire people who do overnighters, because I've not got the energy for that. So where people look at, oh, how do you fish for 2 weeks in the vet? Alan Taylor lives there, fishes all winter, which I don't do now.
Yeah.
Because we live busy life, and our minds will cope with. I think the big change in fishing for big fish is accepting not catching. You know, and you do a lot of that, and the sort of fishing you do. You have to change. From the first time I had a blank night at carp fishing, I felt a complete failure. But now you have to accept that if you're trying to single out a big fish or three big fish, then you've got to accept that you're going to have failures. You know, be it a week, or no one wants to blank a week, no one wants to blank a fortnight, you know. But if that is part of the remit for arriving at where you want to arrive eventually, then you have to find a way of coping with it in your mind. Otherwise, you've got crackers. So I can cope with all that. And I think that is physically. Carp fishing isn't what it was, is it, in terms of when you think of winter fishing in the 70s, and winters were a lot harder in the 70s, and we didn't have the gear that we've got now. You know, as long as you take the trouble of taking this stuff with you and setting it all up, you can be comfortable throughout the session. I'm not a great mover now. You know, if I'm in a swim, that's where I stay. Maybe they'll come to me, maybe won't, or maybe I'll get lucky. So I have accepted that there will be blanks, and it's part of the remit. And when you get a good result, oh God, didn't he do well? Get all the times that he didn't do well. Yeah, he did well that time. And that's part of carp fishing, isn't it?
It makes it worthwhile, you know, the longer I wait between. But if you give me a lake and I'm fishing for, a hard lake, and it's got the jewel of the crown in it, however big it is, there's one fish. If you only put that fish in that lake, I'd be happier having 20 blanks, 30 blanks before I caught that fish than if you put 50 20-pounders in there and I caught on the in-between sessions, but still, you know, took me 20, 25 sessions to catch the fish.
It's a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, give me the length of the one fish. I don't want to catch all the other ones in between. It's nice because you're learning stuff, you know, it's something. But sometimes I want to go fishing and just catch fish, you know, and I'll go to somewhere suitable. The size doesn't matter. I'm just want to go and catch some fish. And other times I want to go hunt something and spend a long time doing it and learn the habits of the fish. And the other fish just get in the way, I think, of where you need to be.
I know what you mean. So, well, and they very much can do so, because we all know that the bigger fish will hang around the periphery and watch what's going on in the baited area. And just one fish coming in and getting caught, that might ruin your chances for the week.
Exactly. So, and it's you know, that hunt, I wouldn't want to catch it on the first session either. You know, if it takes me 10, 20, 30 sessions to catch it, you know, it makes the capture all that much better. You know, you feel like you've earned it. If you just fluked it on the first one, I'd still be happy. But, you know,
well, I know what you mean, because I got lucky with that, and you did that 73-13 from Reduta, and then it took me 13 years to catch the second 70. And of course, there were a lot more 70s around by the time I caught the second 70. So, you know, by the time I caught the second 70, I felt I'd earned it.
So where are you going to catch an 80 from, or is that secret?
Well, I've got the two sessions on Rainbow, and there's still a couple of 80s in Rainbow, I think.
Yeah.
I've got very, very lucky with a two-week booking in November on another water, which I won't name, because I did get lucky with the booking.
Yeah.
And there'll only be three of us on each of the weeks, and there are a couple of mid-80 commons in there, which might give someone a clue. And I'm back on Serriere, where there's the Belgian fish, which might be 80, which I've never caught. I've caught the long fish twice, and I caught the grey lady twice. That was the 78-13.
Yeah.
And I've already caught it at 68, like 3 years before. I'm on three waters that we'll have 80s in this year. Well, sorry, three sessions.
Yeah.
On waters which I have 80s in this year, which is... But if I don't, I don't, you know, but I will have tried.
I think it's written in the stars. I think I'll be looking for the headlines. I think you're going to do it this year. Have you had a look further afield, maybe out towards Croatia and countries like that that seem to be emerging as big fish waters? Have you been following them?
Really, no, because I'm trying to wind down, Jamie, really.
Yeah.
And it's like Tom Rang. I've got two bookings to Tom. I ain't doing it next year. You know, I can't even pick these things up now. It's a bit easier in the water, but it's still a struggle for me. I mean, when we went to Tayats the last time, I put in the batteries back in the caravan at the end, because Stuart loves to come on these sessions.
Yeah.
Putting the batteries back in the caravan, tore the lifting muscle behind my right shoulder, and again, stress that lifting muscle again, because it was agony for a week. And in the end, I had to go to A&E with it, because I thought it was going to get better, and it wasn't getting... So I need someone with me to lift batteries on long sessions now.
Yeah.
Let alone 80-pound carp. So sooner or later, I've got to get realistic. The pills I take for health are not going to increase my strength. I'm far too idle now to go to the gym. So I've got to be realistic and know that, you know, I'm going to wind down on it. So that's why I've taken all these bookings on this year, to try and catch the 80. If I don't, I don't. You know, it's not eating me up. It's just, and for a long time, you'll know what I mean by this, when carp didn't go to 80 pounds, you know, I saw that, because I was with John Lilly in 2006, when he caught Biggs's fish at 80 pounds plus from Rainbow, and you looked at it and you thought, no, carp don't grow that big, that's silly. You know, so for a while, it wasn't even an ambition to catch an 80, to be honest. But that 78-13, I thought, yeah, okay. It's not that much different, is it? You know, in actual fact, it was only 3 ounces short of my age. Because I was 79 at the time, as I am now. So, yeah, it's not eating me up. It's just that rev me up to the fact that I might get lucky enough to catch an 80. And if I do, I will. And if I don't, I don't. Whatever. I've just loved the whole thing, and it's been so good to me, life-wise, in terms of the magazines working and, you know, 9 books, for God's sake, and chapters, and so many others. And it's still a who-me situation. You know, I've no great ego, wow, didn't I do well, sort of thing. Didn't I get lucky, sort of thing. You know, gave me a gift to put words on paper. My mother did, because she was very literate, and perhaps I've made good use of it. But if
I'm doing half the stuff,
it wasn't any better than the guy who's emptying the dustbins or what the hell ever. You know, who wasn't given that gift, and I've never ever thought like that. You know, I just think I'm a very lucky person to arrive at where I've arrived and to achieve what I've achieved.
It sounds like you still enjoy it as well. I mean, it sounds like you are, you know, maintaining as healthy a lifestyle as you can. You're taking all the supplements. You're still fishing regularly. You know, I mean, the fact that you're even talking about trying to lift, you know, leisure batteries into vehicles at 80 years old or nearly 80 is amazing. If I'm doing half that fishing and the other stuff, you know, the businesses that you're running, the Carp Society work, the books that you're writing, I mean, if I'm doing half of that, it's an inspiration, to be honest. It really is.
Well, it's nice if it can inspire others. That is great. But, you know, and I'm a great one for nagging people about smoking. And you know, people are going to grow to be older and older. You know, that's just a fact of life. With the advances in medicine and the good foods we eat. I was talking to someone, and they said the big difference between life now and life then is the quality of the water. I thought, oh, that never occurred to me. But, you know, when you read the life of the Brontes and then the illnesses that they all suffered then and everyone died young and so on, you know, and it was adamant. It was the difference in the quality of the water. So all I would say to someone, if I'm an inspiration to people, then accept that inspiration in that you've got to look after yourself, because your generation might live to be 100, not 80 or 90 or whatever I'm going to make. So if you're going to live that long, you'll still want to enjoy life, to try and find a way of prolonging your active life. It's a dog food, isn't it? What's that? Like what power prolongs active life?
Yeah.
And that has got to be your ambition. If you want to keep doing it, prolong your active life, not just your life.
I think that's a fantastic note to end this on. And I'd like to say thank you very much for joining us on the Carpcast. It's definitely an inspiration to me and hopefully to everybody listening to this.
Well, thanks for asking, man. Flattered to be asked, and I hope someone can take something from it. And thanks for the call, Jamie.
We're just about to end it there, and Tim said, hang on a minute, there is one regret that I have.
A lot of my biographers, motorbiographers, are musicians, and I just wished that my family had been musical, you know, because I suppose my all-time hero is Bob Dylan and the other inspirational people who don't, and I wouldn't call what Bob does now singing, but to me, the inspirational ones are the ones who write their own material, which was why the Beatles were so huge, and are able to perform it to that level, or inspiring. So, yeah, okay, I've got lucky with the books, but I wished I'd had a musical background as an inspiration to go on to something on that level, you know, because they are the real stars to me, the people who create music and perform it. Fantastic.
Well, it's never too late. I'm sure if you really want to.
I'm not musical.
Well, anyone can learn. I didn't consider myself that musical when I was young, but you know, I had lessons at school and started learning and wanted to do it, and I'm sure you're aware if you really want to do something, it is possible. Anything's possible. So maybe if you can't, you know, there comes a time where you're not quite as active or can't get out as much, that's the time to get the guitar teacher in and get yourself an acoustic one year.
I mean, the funny thing is, when the Carp Society thing kicked off, and there was something triggered it in the end, beyond the political thing, and I can't remember what it was. There was, oh my God, what's happening here, sort of thing. I was actually learning the guitar and trying to write songs when the Carp Society started. So Carp Fishing really sidetracked me from an attempt to have a musical career. But now I'll settle for admiring the people who've got one.
Okay, well, thank you once again, Tim, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Okay, all the best, Jamie, and good luck with the show. We'll see you there.
Thank you very much. See you soon, Tim.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
So a big thank you to Gary, mine of information, as always, and such an interesting guy to talk to, isn't he, Mark?
Oh, definitely. I can listen to Gary for hours. Because you know, even though he's be you know dropping the knowledge, and then he'll just you know just come out with something completely off the wall as well, and funny at times.
Yeah, and it usually is hours, isn't it, when you get him talking, because he just goes off. Like, yeah. Right, you know, busy. What do you want? And then 2 hours later.
yeah. One of my favourite quotes I've ever heard comes from Gary Bayes. He says, "I don't use a mozzie mesh. It traps them in and makes them angry."
He's got some crazy ideas and stuff. Yeah, it's just super funny, and it's a pleasure to have him. We've got some listeners' questions.
Ask us a question.
Yes, we've got a couple that I've pulled off the Carpcast forum on our website, thecarpcast.com. First one comes from Adam. I haven't got a surname, and he talks about watercolour. He's got a syndicate of a couple of lakes, both are stream-fed. One is usually gin clear, it's shallow, weedy, and the other one is often coloured at this time of year from leaves falling in, but not a muddy, clouded colour. The heavy rain we've had this week has flooded out the streams, and both lakes have turned to chocolate soup literally overnight. It happens a few times through the year following heavy rain. The gin clear lake clears up again quickly, and the other lake takes longer. Would this change in colour put you off fishing? Would you do anything different? Bait differently or expect any different behaviours from the fish? My feeling would be that the fish in the usually gin clear lake would be very used to sight feeding, so may be put off by the colour, whereas fish were used to the sun colour in the other water would be less affected. One more quick one, probably specifically to Jamie, how would you find the key in winter? So we'll start with the lakes first, because I'll mention Ravenfield, where I've had a couple of day sessions through the winter. That is stream fed, and I have fished it before just after with heavy rain, and it has gone from not gin clear but quite clear to absolute chocolate soup, if you've ever had chocolate soup. Everyone caught. I don't know if it was the extra oxygen in the water or there was a slight raise in temperature because it was winter, but the turnover of water, it just turned the fish on, so it certainly wouldn't put me off fishing. I wouldn't do anything really different. I maybe glug things up a touch more, just put a bit more smell in the area. If they're used to sight feeding, they're not going to be able to do that, so you've got to play with their other senses and just fish the usual areas. That's all I did and caught. It also had, remember the fish I had that day, it was a little linear that flipped in my hands while I was having the pictures done. It actually looks like I'm playing a guitar fish.
Yeah. I've often found when the water's coloured, I mean even in the rivers when the water colour's a bit, you know, it fishes better. Now I don't know if that's because your rigs and stuff are less obvious because of the colouring. I certainly wouldn't put me off fishing. And as far as it can't do any harm to have more attractors in the water. Less sight, more smell. But I don't know if you need to. I mean, you know, there's an argument of, you know, glugging hook baits, glugging your feed baits, you know, making things more attractive, depositing liquids. We've spoke at length about liquids with Mark Holmes. If you go back onto the last Mark Holmes episode we had, he goes quite deep into liquids. But carp's sense of smell is so good anyway that I don't think you need to. Just because the water's coloured, I don't think that makes any difference. The only thing I think the colouring helps with is I think it disguises us a bit better, i.e. our rigs and hooks and whatever. And, you know, the clearer the water, I think the more attention you need to pay to your end tackle, such as, you know, pinning your leaders down or your tubing or whatever you use, and, you know, hook size. I mean, one of the things we always do in winter, and Jim Shelley was one of the experts on this, you know, what he used to go to his hook link, he used to go to 10 pound Maxima in the winter, he used to use a slightly smaller hook, and he used to use, you know, like obviously the 10 pound Maxima is his hair as well, and I think that's purely because when fish are not feeding as heavy, there's less feeding situation, i.e. you know, there's less chance of getting them just preoccupied and turned on, where they'll, you know, throw caution to the wind and just hang themselves. I think that happens a lot less in winter, and one of the reasons for that is because the water's clearer as well, so you know, obviously they can see more, and maybe as they're not feeding heavier. I mean, you know, from when you get fish feeding on the spot and that water turns gloopy from the fish feeding, you know, hammering the bottom, like, that in itself is an attractor to other fish coming in. I mean, I'm sure you've witnessed that, Mark, where, you know, like, when we've come round and we've seen a spot and the spot is coloured, you know this fish going mad in there, and other fish see that, and it's almost like a trigger for them, isn't it? So I like fishing coloured water, you know, whether that colouring's happened from, you know, rainfall or whatever, or fish stirring it up, it does seem to be a trigger. And I think just more general, clear water, you know, gin clear water, pay more attention to your end tackle, you know, whether that be finding the hook size down, you know, using a thinner hook link material. I mean, if you've got a gin clear water and you've got no snags, I would be using the lightest possible tackle I could use. Now, you know, from having fish for other fish before carp, you know that, you know, sometimes if you can't get a bite one day, what you would do, you would put a thinner hook link on. Now, how often do we do that in carp? I bet most people have only got a 25-pound hook link in their tackle box. You know, do you take multiple breaking strains these days?
No.
There you go. So, but you know, if you're not getting a bite one day, how often do you think, right, I'm going to try finding my tackle down using a lighter hook link or a smaller hook? How often do you do that? Probably never, most carp anglers. But if you've ever fished for any other fish, or you're a match angler or whatever, then you're constantly changing until you get a bite. So if I was fishing a water that's absolutely gin clear and that's my lake for the season, then I would be really thinking about using the lightest possible equipment I can get away with, you know, for strength wise, i.e. you know, if you're fishing a lake where there's zero snags, there's nothing for the fish to go into, you know, you haven't got sick heavy weed full of little zebra mussels or whatever, then I would be using the lightest possible tackle I can get away with.
Yeah, I find that interesting, because I'm the other way around. I won't sacrifice strength, you know, because you mentioned gin clear lakes, you know, I know you mentioned also that you know, weed and snag free, but do you know any gin clear lakes that are that nowadays?
Not nowadays, no. They're usually gin clear because they're very weedy. You know, the weed seems to deal with the water quality, doesn't it? As a filter almost, and yeah. You know, and vice versa. Lakes that are gin clear get lots of sunlight through to the bottom, and the weed grows better. So,
there's another thing to think of. You know, carp, cold-blooded creatures, through the winter, the whole body system is not going to be working as well. They're not going to digest food as quickly, and it's that's the reason that they're not going to see as well and they're not going to feel as well. So do we really need to find down, because they're not going to be able to sense our stuff as much?
Yeah, very possibly. And going on to his last point, how do you find the key in cold water? I caught a 50 on it last January on a key cultured hook bait, with just key boilies around it last January, and then I had a 48 in February. So yes, I've caught it in winter. I know Simon Crowe had a cracking winter last year using the key, and that was do you catch that? He had a load of fish, didn't he, including that big one that's now been otted from, what's it called, up Lincolnshire way.
It was, I believe he was fishing Emmetland, though, could be wrong. I know he had one winter up on Emmetland and caught a lot of fish. That was, I think that was his first time, he was when the cray first, when the cray, the key first came out. But no, the one he otted was an autumn capture.
What was that 50 that Daryl Peck caught and a number of other people, Lincolnshire way? It was a mirror. I think it's died. I don't think it was otted. I just think it died. That was in the winter, on Anyway, Crowie caught loads of fish in the winter on the quay. I had a couple of big ones last year in cold water, and I know this year, even though not many places have fished, the lads that are using the quay cray have caught through the winter. They have been catching, so I have no problems using it in the winter. There's nothing in it that says it wouldn't be. I've had an email from Gary asking the exact same question, and there's nothing in the quay cray that wouldn't stop it being a decent winter bait. So I'm more than happy using that. In the winter. Moving on, we got any more?
We have got another one, and this is one of my favourite topics. This Tom Gore asks about single bleeps. At what point do you hit a single bleep? I'm on a session now and have had numerous single bleeps. Some are obvious liners, but some have left me thinking, do I or don't I?
Ask us a question.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't hit single beeps as a rule. Now, quite often in fishing, we're reactive as far as proactive. So if I'm on a lake and somebody else has hit a single beep and there was a fish on the end, then I would be hitting single beeps, if you know what I mean. But there's always the first person to do it that kind of shows the way. Now, like, you get used to your alarms and you kind of know when something's out of the ordinary, don't you? The way I use my indication, we spoke about indication at great length on the Carpcast, but you know, I generally use the longest chain, have a reasonably decent drop on the bobbin. I have enough weight so that the bobbin will go down, you know, if I get a drop back or whatever, not like a super light bobbin, but it's not heavy enough to desensitize it for going up. And then I try and neutrally balance it. I don't really want any stretch in the line, but I don't want it super slack either. So the best way to describe that is semi-slack, I would guess. But I know from my indication and tests, and I've had Rob Hughes go underwater and move my lead and stuff while I'm at the thingy. I know that my bobbin is pretty reactive to what goes on, and because of that, just fishing that way for 25-30 years, I tend to know, I can picture in my head what has happened when I get beeps, whether it be, you know, liners, you know, I can pretty much tell you by the speed of the bobbin moving, you know, whether it's a liner close in, halfway out, or, you know, the really slow ones that don't always drop back to where they start are quite often a long way out, you know, like nearer your rig end than the rod tip end anyway. So I think I pretty much know what's going on. And sometimes when you sat there, you're chatting with your mate, you stood by your rods or whatever, or sat in your bivvy, and it's flat calm and there's absolutely no reason for your bobbin to move, and you get a single beep, you know that's a single beep, that something happened. Like, you just know, it's like, that's an interesting beep, you know. And quite, sometimes it develops into a bite afterwards, but certainly something has touched your line or moved your rig slightly, like, without doubt. Now, the thing to work out is, as something bumped your line, you know, somewhere between your rod tip and the hook bait, i.e. a liner, or has something gone on at the rig end. And it's very hard for me to say to this chap, Tom, you know, is it something I would hit? But if I had any reason to think it was something at the rig end, i.e. I've seen fish over the spot, you know, the blowback tubing was blown back, you know, the previous time I reeled in, if I had any inclination to think that it was something going on my spot, I would certainly hit a couple of them to, you know, see if there is a fish on the end. I've got to be honest, I can't remember the last time I actually picked the rod up after a single beep and there was a fish on the end. Like, but I know people that fish different ways, you know, they maybe fish tight line and heavy bobbins and stuff. I've seen them have a single beep and do nothing, then pick the rod up and there's a fish on. But I think that's more because they're not fishing fine enough on the indication side of it. So I think if that was my setup, I might have had four beeps to their one single beep, if you know what I mean. So I'm wondering if that's just the sensitivity of how I fish. You know, I can't remember the last time I had a single beep and there was a fish on, because I think I'm getting more beeps than maybe some people are getting just with the way that I fish. You know, and you get some people that they get a single beep, but they're fishing, you know, like a bobbin tight up against the buzzer, you know, on these very short chains like people do. And quite often you're only going to get a single beep, and then the line's going to be stretching because you're fishing quite tight. And you know, if that was my setup with a decent drop on the bobbin, I probably had four or five beeps, and I know that there's something on there as to somebody else's one beep. Do you get, am I explaining that very well?
Yeah, it's slightly different to what I'm doing, but again, quite similar with the you know, drop on the bobbin.
Yeah.
So I have 8 single bleeps quite often, and I'd probably say 4 times out of 5 there's nothing on the end. But, you know, 1 in every 5 you hear is going to have a fish on. It's certainly well worth doing. Now, what I like to do, if I get a single bleep, then that is all I need. That's got my attention on the rod. Then that's it. The buzzer's done its job. I'll be focusing. I'll be looking where the line enters the water. And then any unnatural movement, or if it's tightened up and is not coming back down, then I'll hit it. If it's up and then back down, then there's a good chance that was a liner, and I'll leave if it's going back to the same position it was. But anything unnatural, you know, just give it. What have you got to lose? You might catch a fish, you might not.
Yeah, if you get a beep and it kind of holds up, and it's just a single beep and the bobbin kind of stays up, and there's no reason for it to, i.e. you're fishing in weed or whatever, you know, obviously if you're fishing in weed and it's quite high up and you get a liner or something, quite often it doesn't drop back down, especially if you're using a lightish bobbin. But, you know, if I'm fishing, if I know there's a pretty clear route, especially like there might be now in winter where there's not a lot of stuff high up in the water, if anything, you know. But I think, you know, when you get a beep, sometimes you think, as Tom kind of hints at here, you know, he's had a numerous single beeps and some are obvious liners, but some have left me thinking. I think if you get one that leaves you thinking, then, yeah, pick that rod up. And it only takes that one time as the fish on the end, and that's it. And you know, I think pressured lakes, and it does happen this time in winter where the fish pick the bait up, hooks themselves, and because it's so cold, the water, and they're a bit more lethargic, they're not moving off, and not because they're super tricky, but just because it's cold, like they're not particularly. And again, if I'm fishing next to a weed bed, like any time of year, sometimes you do only get one or two beeps because the fish has kited a foot or two into the weed and just sat there in the weed, and sometimes you only get a couple of beeps then. So it's sorry I can't answer your question definitively, but if you're getting one of those beeps that you think, what was that, that was an out of the ordinary beep, then yeah, pick it up. And what have you got to lose? I don't believe fish are scared by casting anymore. I used to think they were, but I now don't. Moving on, we got any more?
Well, there's the one you mentioned earlier on, a fella asking about Elstow 2, but I think we'll just, you know, reply on the forum for that one because it's pretty specific, not just to Elstow 2, but he mentioned even a certain swim.
Yeah, the decoy, or the mother swim, as it pretty much is, or used to be.
Yeah, he did like to hang around there. I mean, I think she was daft in that anyone could catch her from there or the low point.
If we're going to, if we're going to try and make this more general for other people, I mean, Elstow is quite deep, and there's a definite margin. The margins do seem to be the best feature in that lake. They run at, I mean, it might be different now with the depths of the water, but you know, there was a fairly steep drop, wasn't there? To what, 20 foot, 22 foot, where you kind of felt that the weed disappeared and you were on the bottom, and that distance around the lake, whatever distance that was, where you kind of, you know, over the shelf, I mean, that's where most of the fish were caught, weren't they, by the odd open water spots.
It was, yeah, but I know we've said this plenty of times before, imagine if we had the chud rig back then and we could actually fish on top of that onion weed and not fish down in 20 foot and fish, you know, in 8 foot, 10 foot.
Yeah, and just feed it, because we know from what we could see
crumbs over there.
Yeah, we know from what we saw in the margins, like baiting areas on the onion weed where fish visited, they would bury themselves in it and create carp holes, as we used to call them. So
they would destroy it in occasions if they really went for it in numbers.
Yeah, although the mother always used to come from 20 foot plus, didn't it? I mean, that's one tip we can give this chap, but. You know, look for habit. You're targeting a fish, look for patterns and habits, and that fish regularly came from deep water, didn't it? 20 to 35 foot. I don't have too many feet captures of that fish in less than 20 foot. I'm sure there are some in the summer and stuff and spawning time and whatever, but it did tend to come from deep water, and yeah, what he hints to here, sticking to the margins, creating a feature with bait, if you can do that, then yeah, that is the sort of water that did respond to that. I mean, there's a lot more fishing than there was when we fished it. But yeah, the margins, I think if you've every lake you fish for the rest of your life, if you stuck to the margins, you'll probably catch as many fish as you would fishing it any other way. You might catch certain fish at different times of year, only fishing the margins, but the margins are the best feature in any lake, aren't they? And fish do patrol them.
Yeah, they're certainly the biggest. And yeah, I've only fished one water where the margins have just, well, been crap.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's Icom.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, there's probably about 3 or 4 mile of margin as well.
Wow.
And almost everything I've caught from there has been, apart from one swim, you know, 80, 90 yards plus.
Wow. Interesting.
If island margins count as well, then you can add 4 on there.
We've got a Worth a Look, something that's been released this week.
Worth a Look.
And that is Eurobanks 3. Which is Alan Blair and Ollie Davis travelling around Europe. It's a bit of a Euro version of the Urban Banks. I have a fleeting appearance, the back of my head, when I met them in Amsterdam and we had a barbecue and got absolutely wasted. I had the hangover to show the next morning. But yeah, again, it's a fantastic production. If you... Every one of the Urban Banks and Eurobanks, they just make me want to go fishing. You know, the photography, the settings that they catch fish in, just the whole ethos of Alan and Ollie going on that mission. It just epitomizes the hunting and the, you know, the adventurous side of fishing, carp fishing, I think. I watched it all the other day and it's great. Again, superbly edited, you know, it's cool music and just makes you want to go fishing, doesn't it?
Yeah, is it as good as number two where they visited Lake Bled? Because, you know, I'm really impressed with that one. It did have me thinking, you know, can they top that?
I don't know if they'll ever top Lake Bled, and I think that's because of the venue itself. You know, the yeah. setting, the, you know, the church on the island. And but I'll tell you what,
they had towards the end as well was something else.
Yeah, and they had an epic session, didn't they? I think they were unlucky with sizes of fish in this particular trip. I don't think they had anything like, you know, they didn't recreate that mega nights fishing that they had where they were catching 30s, 40s and 50s one after the other, you know, in an electrical storm with that with that church in the background. I mean, you know, they probably may equal that at some point, but I'll tell you what, it's just as watchable, this one. It's, you know, I watched it within 5 minutes of being released at 5 p.m. on Friday and I watched it all. Rachel, my missus, makes an appearance on there, probably more than me, actually. She's they didn't show much of the festival at the end. I think we're all a bit too wasted to actually publicly broadcast that content. We went to a drum and bass rave on the Sunday afternoon in Amsterdam. We had a really good day. But yeah, I'm not sure any of the footage is actually usable. From what I gather, it's in the end credits. There's a few clips of it. Very fast. But yeah, we had a fantastic section in Amsterdam. Again, there was a lot of, it's great, watch it. It's, you know, some of the best fishing viewing I've ever watched, and as are all the others. But yeah, so not to be completely Nash based, the Corder Masterclass 4 is out as well, isn't it, Mark?
Worth a Look.
It is, yeah, there's 4 parts. They're all on YouTube. I'm sure they'll all be on DVDs in your local tackle shop very soon, like the other ones have. Now, I've got to confess, I've not watched a single second of any of them yet, so I can't really give an in-depth review of it. But I know you've got part one, which is a lake exclusive, I believe is a Gigantica. You know, part two is particle fishing, part three, precision weed fishing, and part four, spring fishing. I think I'm going to watch part four first, to be honest, get some motivation going for the spring.
Yeah, I'm sure they're, you know, having a look at zigs and all the sort of weaker parts of my angling armoury. So, yeah, I'm interested. I might watch that this evening, actually, if I get a chance. So, yeah, it's a couple of Worth a Looks there. It's great, isn't it, all this free content that comes out for anglers these days?
Oh, it's spoiled. Nothing to complain about.
No, I'm sure that there will be complainers, but well, you've got a free carp cast, there's Eurobanks, which is free, the Quarter Masterclass, which is free. You can get BT Sport free with your phone and watch all the on the bank stuff and all the match fishing episodes by Rob Hughes. There's tons of stuff out there. Content has never been better, has it?
No, and if you like watching obscure things, just go on YouTube, search carp fishing. There's hours of browsing stuff. Some real good, some real black bad, some just downright odd. But lots of free content.
What a time to be alive!
Oh, it's amazing.
Until next week, that's us. We'll catch you later.
Website at www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.